Welcome to episode 16 of Sacred Cheese of Life, Objects in Space. I sound confused already. Objects in Space is the last episode of the TV show Firefly, which was a short-lived cult classic in, 2002 and 3? Something like that. I never watched it really until later. A friend messaged me, I guess she emailed, it was Ancient Times, and said, you have to watch this show, back in 2002. And I put it on, and I walked right into the middle of a terrifying episode with this guy with, like, knives through his face attacking everyone. Anyway, it was absolutely terrifying. And so I was like, not for me, which happened constantly. Someone would recommend a show, and I would tune into it at absolutely the worst possible moment. Someone told me to watch Leverage back then. It must have been later. No, it was then, I think. And said, you know, you're going to love this show. And I was like, okay, I'll watch it. Tuned in to the episode where they're like back in time. Like they're both modern people and living in the 40s. And I was like, I have no idea what's going on here. I don't like this. And of course, that's a wonderful episode. Now I can see that. And that became one of my favorite shows. But at the time I thought, ugh, I don't understand at all what's going on here. Do they always go back in time? Are they actually back there or is it different people? I had no understanding. The wrong episode to watch, but I just grabbed the first one that came along. So the moral of the story is, yes, my friends have really good recommendations for shows and boy, you got to start in the right place or just don't start in the absolute wrong place because Firefly is not like that episode with the scary guy with the knives in his face and whatnot, freaking out and, you know, doing a bug hunt around the ship for him. Just nightmare tension horror show, you know, horror movie is what I'm trying to say. Isn't horror show from Clockwork Orange or something? Anyway, I'm a little bit out of it today because of the smoke alarm, because the smoke alarm kept going off and I couldn't figure out which one it was because, you know, they stop before you get there. So how are you supposed to know? And so yesterday it went off at 4:30 in the morning while I was asleep and then I was awake the rest of the day and got so strung out and tired that I couldn't get to sleep that night. So I had to take something to sleep and now I'm still groggy from that because I slept half the day. Like literally got up in the morning, took the dog out, fed the animals, made a cup of tea, and went to sleep for 4 hours on the couch and the ottoman, which is not ideal for your mental acuity. Also, I hurt my back moving a quilt. Okay, I've cut down all these trees. Did not hurt myself doing that. Dropped trees that are many, many hundreds of pounds, like enormous green trees. So they weigh a ton. All their leaves are on them. No injuries doing that. Felt great after, slept like a baby. Yesterday I moved a quilt rack, which is very light. Moved it up the stairs. But the thing is, the center of the weight was not close to me. There's no way to do that. And I hurt my back doing it. So I was in pain and awake from that too. Anyway, just to explain, I'm a little bit out of it today from two stupid things that don't matter and were easy to avoid had I avoided them. Like, I changed the batteries yesterday. Why didn't I do it the day before, right? Nope. All right. So anyway, here I am. Here we are. That's the last line in that episode. Here I am. So Objects in Space, last episode of the TV show Firefly. It is a beautiful episode. Firefly is a found family show, obviously. It's a found family of nine, which is a large group, but they are sort of on their own a lot, so you need a large group. It's also very character-based. It's not one of your procedural kind of plot-based storytelling shows. It's character-based. Like, I think that's what makes a cult classic, and I've been going over this in my mind. I've been meaning to record this for days. Between the lumberjackery and the insomnia and the whatnot. Oh, and I got really mad at a doctor, which is why I cut down those trees. I was so mad. I was like, I'm really mad. I'm going to go cut down trees about it, which actually really helps, you know, intense physical exertion. Also, mortal terror takes your mind off a lot of things. The mortal terror, because if I did it wrong, the tree would absolutely kill me. So I don't do it wrong. But there is that danger. And I'm out there going, like, panting in terror the whole time. It's, you know, peak experience. Some people are skydivers. Some people want sunshine on their house and less mold. So they cut down trees. And so, yeah, I've been meaning to do this for a while. I also got a terrible migraine in the middle. It's been a week, okay? I'm fine. I watched the entire series to lead up to this because A, I love it. I used to love it anyway. I'm not saying I don't love it now. I just don't love it with the fervor I used to love it. It is character-based, though. Like, it was very clear to me watching the whole thing. Episode 1 did not really have much to do with episode 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, although up to 13. I think there's 13. It's a great show to watch if you love the characters. And I can't imagine watching it if you don't. And maybe that's, like, how I walked into it with the scary guy. I had no idea who these people were, so I didn't care. You have to know who they are to care. And I think that's why you have to start slowly. You have to meet them. You have to meet people. And I'm thinking, I don't need another project right now. I have this pilot idea. I don't even have Final Draft anymore. It died when my laptop died last year. Lost it. Can't get it back. I emailed Final Draft and said, and they're like, silence. They didn't care. They don't care. I have the license and the code and everything. I should be able to get it back, but no. I guess because it's too old, they don't do that. Anyway, I have to get it again if I do this thing. But I am trying so hard to put The Geographic Cure out, Volume 1, and finish this novel, which is stalled at an awkward moment, because I get to the awkward moment and I'm like, I have to go clear brush now because I run away from it. So either delete it and do something else, skip it and go on, do something. But I'm an avoidant person and I'm avoiding it. And so I have The Geographic Cure and the novel in progress, Summerlands, and this other novel that's totally a mess and stalled, the 40 Days and 40 Nights one, Becca. Absolutely no idea what's going on with that. Two books of short stories that are almost ready to go, but I have to face them. And guess how good I am at facing them? Bad. I'm bad at it. Okay, so yeah. So if I had a wish for today, I decided you get one wish every day. I'm just making up the rules here. My wish would be to be infinitely better, like my best self at facing things, and stop running away. Stop it. Face the thing. Do the thing instead of running away from the thing. Okay? I think that's a reasonable wish. It's definitely a character flaw. So character-based, you'd have to... Yeah, I guess you will be able to read this in the future. You'd have to have somebody who wants to do a thing but is scared of it and runs away from it. That's annoying. To me, that's annoying. Like, knock it off. If I were watching that on a show, I mean, it's sympathetic, but like, seriously, after a while, you're like, just do the thing. If you want to do the thing, you have to do the thing. You can't just not do the thing. Right? Yeah. Yes, it's true. All right. So objects in space. Okay. So at this point, we're at the 13th episode, we have met all these people, we know all these people, we care about all these people. We care about the ship. The ship is incredibly, what's the word? Not sympathetic, but it's appealing. It's incredibly appealing. And I was writing, I guess on the, if you go to, I'm pointing with my chin as though you can see it, on the blog about this, Story on the Brain. I was writing about how I have had an obsession since day one about a self-contained living space. Like, my old VW bus was this, you know, the back seat folded out into a bed. It didn't have the little kitchen in it, but you know, some of them do, and it didn't pop up, but it did have skylight. So it had little curtains and I could travel in it and I could just fold out the bed and go to sleep. Amazing. I love that so much. And it's a constant fantasy, or I might even say obsession. And Firefly, the ship, is named Serenity. Serenity is like that to me. Like, it's a self-contained, mobile living space. They travel in it. They live in it. They each have their own room or bunk. They have a kitchen. There's a big cargo space. You know, they play basketball there. They hang out there. There's infinite little nooks and crannies all around. There's the engine room, that's Kaylee's space, there's the bridge, that's Wash's space, you know, Inara has her own shuttle that flies away, but that's her space. It's a family on the road, right? It's self-contained and it's a whole world unto itself, and that to me is incredibly appealing. And so that's one thing I love about the show. But the ship, Serenity, it's not like nobody else ever comes aboard. Sometimes people come aboard. It's nearly always hostile when they do. So invasion of the space, their space, is nearly always hostile. It can be the bad guys, the Alliance, who are like the cops. They come aboard and like search stuff and break stuff and throw everything around. Old army buddy shows up. He's a disaster. Starts trying to control things and shoot at people. There's other people who come aboard, like the scary knife face guy, he gets aboard. Well, they bring him, they save him and bring him aboard. Anyway, everybody who comes aboard ends up being hostile, which I think is a very interesting point about the show that I'd never really put together before. So this episode has somebody who sneaks aboard. They are all in bed. Well, they're mostly in bed. Kaylee's still in the engine room. The shepherd is up and about doing stuff. We don't know where River is. Everybody else is in bed. And so sneaking aboard is a violation of their space. And like I said, it's mostly always hostile anyway. But he comes aboard. His name's Jubal Early, which is a name from history. You can look it up if you care. Jubal Early, he's a bounty hunter. So Simon later says, so you're a bounty hunter? And he says, no, that's not it at all. I'm a bounty hunter. So he's kind of unglued, okay? So we have this insane bounty hunter who comes aboard. He's all in red. He wears this suit the whole time, takes off the helmet. So he's just a scary alien presence. He's also extremely violent. He's a bounty hunter. Did I mention he's a bounty hunter? He wants River and Simon. There's a bounty on them. So he comes aboard to get them. Here's what he does. He beats up Mal, the captain, drops him down into his bunk. And then he locks Mal, Zoe, Wash, and Jane into their bunks. So all of the most physically capable people who you might expect to fight back are now locked in. He runs into the shepherd, who is quite physically capable also, but an older gentleman, beats him up, like really nasty, like beats on him when he's lying down, when he's already fallen down. It's pretty ugly. He runs into Kaylee, and this is where it gets even uglier, and this is why I wanted to talk about it. Because objects in space is such a threat to the heart of this family that he runs into, he's looking for River and Simon. That's what he wants. And you can imagine that if he had found them first off, he would have just taken them and left. But he doesn't find them. He doesn't find River. He's looking for River. He runs into Kaylee and he is so awful to her. He says just straight up, you ever been raped? Holy crap, what a horrible thing to say. Kaylee's the sweetest, nicest person. She's terrified through this whole scene. I put up a still of it. She's afraid. He wants her to be afraid. He doesn't want her. She says, the captain can hear you. He's right. He's like, yeah, nobody's coming to help you. Say it. And she says, nobody's coming to help me. Like that. Like this poor girl. Okay, so this poor Kaylee, she's just the sweetheart. She's the youngest, except for River. She's so cute and like country and not mean. There's no meanness in her. She's kind and caring. And she's also a mechanic. So I think that's really cool. She's my favorite character by far. Like back in the day when there was cosplay involved, I was like, well, obviously I should dress up as Zoe. And then I'm like, I'm not Zoe. I'm not Zoe. I'm obviously Kaylee. So I did actually dress up as Kaylee. And there was a point where I walked through this place, I guess movie theater, and people were like pointing, like, look, that's a Kaylee, or like, that's, look, she looks like Kate, she's dressed as Kaylee. Like, it worked. It really worked. Got my little jumpsuit with the patch on it, little shirt, little flip-flops. It's actually a really easy costume. I traded a Ken doll with a Jane hat to a Marine for an official green jumpsuit. This was back in the day when, I don't know, things were more interesting. So anyway, Kaylee, she's wonderful. So he says, I need River. I need to find River. And if you make any noise, your body is forfeit. It's just the most upsetting scene. And it's already this guy's in the ship and he's threatening Kaylee with rape. He says, like, he's quite explicit about it. He's like, it's just a body to me. What does he say? And I can think of all unseemly manner of use for it, which is like, you're talking about her to her face as an object, just a body to me. Oh, yikes. No, nobody's just a body. You're a person. That's a person. Everybody knows this, which is why it's such a violation just to say those things. Like, what a horrible thing. So he ties her up, hands behind her back. So there she is lying on the floor of the engine room with her hands tied behind her back. And it's a horrifying image. And then he goes searching and he finds Simon and he decides to make Simon search for River because that's his sister. Nobody can find her. They go all over the place. I think he beats Simon up a little bit, but he needs him to find River. So he's beat up or locked in or tied up everybody. Everybody's immobilized and he's got a gun on Simon. It's as bad as it can be, really. Like, it's really bad. Nobody has any power over anything. And that's how he wants it. But River is sort of insane and also a genius, and she finds a way to, she escapes. Like, she knows what's going on, and she escapes up into the vents or something. I don't know. I've conflated her with Parker. She's not unrelated to Parker in Leverage. So she's gone. Nobody can find her. And Inara even says, this is a smuggling ship. I've been on it for however long she's been on it, and I couldn't tell you half the places there are to hide. So he wants to find her so bad, but he can't. And this is where they take away the control from him. And this all goes back to objects in space, which is the original idea here. He wants her to be an object. He's like, yeah, I don't care. The warrant or the bounty, whatever, doesn't specify dead or alive, but, you know, alive's easier for me. Don't have to carry you. I'm paraphrasing. She escapes that definition. She escapes his attempt to turn her into an object. And she's up in the walls or in the ceiling or who knows where she is. It's never even clear where she is. Later, we find out she's in a space suit. And she's outside. And she goes to his ship, which is such a beautiful reverse. He's trying so hard to find her. And she pretends that she's the ship. She says, I'm not on the ship. I am the ship. And he's kind of insane. He's not quite sure what reality is. And she knows things about him, which again, we find out because she's in his ship. But she freaks him out. And he's like, wait, you can't really be the ship, can you? Which is very funny because no, of course not. He says, that's some nonsensical crap. Ain't nobody can do that. Yeah, obviously, Jubal Early, nobody can do that. That's the beautiful reversal. And the whole episode plays on this, that he's the invader. And I mean, if you want to read it, I guess I wrote this in Story on the Brain. If you want to read it as a rape revenge fantasy, he gets into Serenity. Nobody wants him there. He's violent. He's awful and cruel to everybody. And they kick him out because of River, who can embody, incorporeally inhabiting the spaceship. I still can't say it. Because of River, who becomes the ship and kicks him out. She kicks him out by luring him out by being in his ship. She says, I'll go with you. I'll be your bounty. She volunteers to be the object. And he goes out there to get her. And that's when the captain also goes out there and throws him off into space. So he is no longer an issue. Jubal Early, gone. He doesn't have little thrusters on his suit or whatever. He's just gone. If you're loose out there, you're loose out there. Anyway, the ship isn't connected, and he's not connected to anything. And when he jumps from his ship to Serenity, I was like, too scary. You're loose in space. You could so easily just get lost. And so at the end, yes, he does. He gets thrown off and bounces off his own ship and goes off in some trajectory to nowhere. And he becomes, of course, the object in space. No longer a person. Well, he will be, when he runs out of air or freezes, he's dead. He's an object in space. That's the beauty of this episode, is that it's about person becoming object. Object becoming person. It's so beautiful. I could write an essay on it all day long, but I'd rather just talk about it. Because Serenity isn't a person, but it's also kind of a person. And when you've watched enough found family spaceship shows like me, the ship almost, I'm sorry to keep laughing. It's just really funny because this is my absolute favorite genre of show. Found family on a spaceship. I love it. My other favorite is Farscape, of course. Farscape. Deep Space Nine, Battlestar Galactica, my three favorite shows of all time. I think you have to add Leverage to it because I've watched Leverage more than probably anything ever, but that's because I listened to the commentaries. See previous episode for more details. But yes, found family on a ship, the ship often becomes a person. And I do, at some point in the future, want to talk about the cyborg thing, the cyborg question. When is an inanimate object a person? A lot of the time it is. I'm trying to think of all of the inanimate objects in my life that have sort of been people to me. Not people, but alive, let's say. My cello. I was in love with my cello from the beginning when I first got it. Like, if you had hurt my cello, it would hurt me. I almost feel like it feels pain. People are this way about their cars. If somebody breaks into your car or even smashes your car with a hammer or something, whatever, keys your car, it hurts you, right? Do you almost feel that physically? I almost feel it physically. I don't want anything to happen to my car. What else? My baritone, of course. Another instrument that I was very close to. I got it in fourth grade, and it's right over there. I'm looking at it. It's right here in the room with me. Cello's upstairs. These are House is on Fire, What Do You Take First? The Dog and the Cat. Paintings I painted. My cello. My quilts. Anything else? I mean, obviously, I would take everything if I had time. But if there's no time, that's what I take. And I don't know if you've thought that through, but you should. And you should, of course, have a go bag. Everyone should have a go bag. Everybody knows this. I live in terror that a tree will fall in the house and it'll get, you know, health department or whatever says, once your house gets squashed by a tree and it's not safe, they don't let you back in. And so I think about it all the time, like in high wind storms. I'm laughing at myself. I'm sorry. But I live in terror. You have to understand I live in terror. In high wind or when there's a blizzard, you will find giant IKEA bags full of quilts by the door of my house. Oh no. And in the mudroom door, because the side door is under a huge white pine tree. I'm surrounded by them. I'm not taking down the white pines, A, because they're much too big for me to handle. B, because the way I take trees down is I tie one tree to another tree so it has a direction it has to fall. And C, because their branches are up so high, they don't block the sun from the house. Their branches are way, way, way high up there. I suppose they've been crowded out by the deciduous trees around their ankles. But anyway, the white pines are quite likely to fall in this house. I have a fire ladder upstairs already attached to a 6x6 mailbox post, 8 feet long, so that I can escape. I have a harness to put on my dog to lower her out the window. Yeah, that's going to happen. 65-pound dog. Belayed with a hawser. I have a hawser because it holds all the weight. So anyway, that's my plan in case the trees fall on me. And that's partly why I'm having war on trees, mostly because of the damp and the shade and the plants dying because they don't get any sun. But also partly I don't want them to fall in the house. Yeah. Last December, there was a huge snowstorm. Power was out for, 6 days? Ugh, it was a nightmare. But all of these white pines got knocked down, and the noise of it was incredible. Because a huge white pine, what are they, 50, 60, 70 feet high? Much taller than the house, and really close to the house, were going down. And not the ones near the house, but the ones further away went down. And one would knock over another and another and another so that you just can't even imagine. And it was silent here except for the generator running. And the noise of it was terrifying because, of course, the ones right near the house I was sure were going next. They never have. And I know perfectly well that the most dangerous thing anybody does is drive. Living near trees is not as dangerous as driving. But that week when the white pines all in the woods behind me were going down one after the other, it put the terror in me. Not that it wasn't there before. Objects in space. I want to remain an agent, not an object. Is that the opposite? You're a doer, not a thing that is done to. And that's objects, isn't it? It's about not having agency. If you're an object, if you're treated as an object, you don't have agency. Terrible. Nobody wants that. So there's me cutting down trees. I'm the one who does it. I decide which tree falls and where. And my landlord is building a house nearby. He said the guy helping him was like, hey, your tenant is cutting down trees. And he's like, yeah, I know. That's what she does. She does that. I do. That's what I do now. I cut down trees when I get super stressed. It's fine. I'm supposed to. He said it was okay. We talk about which ones and how and where. And he's like, yep, just don't get hurt. Don't drop them on the house and don't get hurt. So I'm not dropping them on the house and I'm not getting hurt. Those are my rules. I want to remain the agent in this relationship with the trees, not the object. Subject is the opposite of object. Subject. I want to be the subject. All right. So Objects in Space, if you ever watch it, it's incredibly beautiful. The way it's shot is beautiful. It's a tight episode. I guess if I had to object to anything, I would object to the introduction of rape as a threat. Because he's already beat up everybody. Why don't you just threaten to beat up Kaylee? Why does it have to be rape? And I know why. It's the same as killing someone. You take their agency away. You turn them into an object instead of a subject. That's the goal of both of those things. It says, I'm the subject, you're the object. Everything's grammar to me, sorry. But that's the goal of both of those things. And he wants to use her as leverage against Simon. And so, because he seems to be very intuitive, and Simon and Kaylee sort of have a thing going that never quite goes anywhere. That's leverage over Simon. And he wants to control Simon to find Rivers. And that's why Kaylee gets the threat. It's not like, don't yell or I'll kill you. It's don't yell or I'll come back and you will hate it. You will be helpless and I will hurt you and control you. I think it's the most horrible moment, even worse than all of the, like, there's literal torture in other episodes. There's a guy named Niska tortures Mal and Wash, but they're busy joking to each other and trying to, you know, to keep their minds on it, off of it, keep their minds on surviving. So you've got two guys being tortured, like blood everywhere, nasty, sharp objects, and they're joking, which is how stories survive awfulness. Nothing undercuts this moment of awfulness, though. It's just there, and then it's gone. It's just sort of, it passes by. Like, you don't get Kaylee getting the guy back. You don't get that. You get River uniting. River frees everybody. River gets in the comms somehow and tells Kaylee, you know, I need you to do something for me. And she says, I can't, I'm tied up. River says, you got tools. You got tools nearby. And Kaylee realizes then she's had the power all along to cut the ropes. She has tools. And that's how River helps everybody. Like, she gets Kaylee loose. Kaylee goes and unlocks the bunks. That gets Mal and Wash and Zoe and Jane loose. It's how everything gets solved. But Kaylee had that power all along, which amazes me. She was lying there being an object when she really was a subject. Which is, I'm sorry to keep talking about true crime and my favorite murder and everything, but there are moments in a lot of these stories when some psycho has somebody under their control and they get free because they realize they are not an object, they are a subject. They are not just an object, they are a subject. They control their own lives. And it happens, and some of these stories, maybe you should listen to My Favorite Murder. There's only like 7 zillion episodes now. They're almost all, I almost said all, they're almost all really good. Like, just the latest one, listen to last Thursday's episode. Today is, I don't know, oh, it's the 22nd day of September. But Thursday's episode, this horrible serial rapist and murderer cop who kept like handcuffing people and doing all this stuff, puts this girl on a stump with a noose around her neck so that if she gets off of it and she's handcuffed and tied up, if she gets off of it, she'll strangle. But no, she chews through the rope, gets away. The other girl he has also gets away. They get away. They're, you know, so they're like captured by a serial killer and they escape, which is just like, this is why people listen to true crime, because the danger is out there. You know, the danger is out there. Someone who wants to treat you as an object in whatever way, and you can retain your subjecthood, your agency in any of those situations. And this is going to sound like a crazy thing to say, but as an educator, I think we've done a disservice to a lot of people by teaching them that they don't have agency. Like, if you're a student, you are supposed to do what you're told, you're supposed to sit there quietly, etc., etc. And that sort of discipline, I know there are arguments out there, you can read Paulo Freire, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, etc., that what we're doing is training people to be docile. And you can again go back to the good girl, sad boy episode. Being a good student means you do what you're told, you learn the thing, you don't argue, etc. You know what being a good student is like. When you're not that, you get punished for it. And what we're teaching is obedience. And it means that people tend to, and this is awful, but it's very common, people get into these situations where there's a bad guy who makes the rules. They set down the rules. They're like, if you do this, this happens. And we have trained people to go along with that. Whereas you don't have to. And I don't know why I'm always telling students this. I guess it's because we read these stories like, where are you going? Where have you been? where the guy lays down the rules, and I will talk about it at some point. And she does what he says, and you don't have to. You don't have to do what they say. You don't have to accept other people's rules. It's not school. But you can't be in school from your whole life long and then suddenly be like, okay, I don't have to do what people say. First there's school, then there's work. You have to do what people say. I don't think it's that healthy, to be honest. I really think losing all that independence is very bad for people. We have such obedience beaten into us. It's really unhealthy. And we don't have to do what those people say. And I just think of Kaylee lying there, you know? She's lying in the engine room full of tools. Get up, do something. You don't have to do what he says. And yes, he threatened her, but that's fiction. That's fiction. It hasn't happened. And when someone says, this is how it's going to go, like, okay, maybe in your version of reality, but in my version of reality, it doesn't. And you don't have to accept their version of reality. And I think about that every single time I watch Objects in Space. People doing what this crazy guy says just because he came into their ship and is ordering them around. And Simon is actually a great example of someone who doesn't. He's just like, yeah, I'm not going to help you find my sister. And then he helps sort of, I'm trying to do air quotes, by leading Early all around the ship, but he's not really helping him. He's just like, well, we can go look over here, I guess. He's not going to find her. He knows they're not going to find her. She's way too smart. But he goes along with it in the sense of, yeah, I'll go with you. But he's not deferential. He's not even afraid. He's just like, yeah, okay, here we go. Let's do it. I guess we're going to go search the ship now. That's the aspect of Objects in Space that always worries me, is that just flat obedience. And yes, it's terrifying. And yes, the scary man has a gun. But so what? Right? If he's going to kill you, he's going to kill you. He's trying to control you. So he doesn't want to kill you. He just wants to control you. It's just very interesting. The ship as an object and as a being, it's kind of a being. And if you're a Farscape watcher, you know their ship is alive. They have a living ship. And I feel like the smaller ships like this one, like Serenity and Moya, who's the ship in Farscape, are characters. They're characters in the show. You get upset when somebody's hurting Serenity. You get upset when somebody's hurting Moya. And Moya is alive. But honestly, that's just such a slim distinction because the two ships are very similar in the way you feel about them. In the future, when I start getting into the cyborg thing, boy, I keep thinking about this one episode where these guys decide they're going to have some fun with Sharon. And it's something I have to talk to Jacob. Where's Jacob? Because he said a very interesting thing about that. He said, you can't rape a machine, which is true, but now I'm thinking about that guy on the couch. I know that never happened, but it's still very funny. It's true, but there's things I wouldn't want people to do to my car. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, Sharon's a person. Clearly, she's a person. She has a rank. She has a name. She has a life. She has a boyfriend. Like, she's a person with agency. Anyway, I have to save that for the Battlestar Cyborg Cylon discussion. But it's just something I think about all the time is that, and I taught a class at Temple University many, many years ago. I guess it was 99, 2000. Not just fall of 99. It was called Boundaries of the Human. Okay, so obviously I've been thinking about this for, what's that, 25 years? Thinking about it to the point of teaching a whole college class about it. We read some really interesting things. We read a Marge Piercy novel called He, She, and It about this woman who builds a robot, a golem robot guy, and has a sexual relationship with it. Because that's the other thing that always bugs me about cyborg stories is it's always female cyborgs and male humans. And like, knock it off, science fiction. I know science fiction's dominated by male writers, blah, blah, blah. But think it through. Think through what you're doing there. Think it through. Seriously. And we can talk about the plan later. Yeah, we read that and we watched the movie Dead Man Walking, which is about not just a rapist, but it's about a rapist who we have to think about as a person, because it's so easy to write somebody off and turn them into an object. And that's what Sister Helen's all about, is these are people too. They did terrible things, yes, but you don't get to go, that's not a person anymore. And we are really, really good at suddenly going, that's not a person. They look like a person. They got a heartbeat and a brain and thumbs and stuff. But they did this bad thing, so now they're not a person and they don't get rights. And that is something that we need to quit doing, because we're just turning them into objects. We're objectifying them. You can't do that. You can't say this isn't a person if it's a person. And my definition obviously is broader even than just humans. You don't treat animals as things. You don't treat my car as a thing. Don't treat anything. I mean, some things are things. I feel bad cutting trees down. So obviously my definition is I'm an overly empathetic person. I'm still cutting down the trees, aren't I? Because I cannot have all my books go moldy. I'm sorry. And my furniture and everything. It's not okay. And this summer I ran a dehumidifier the whole time, so I got a $300 electric bill. But my furniture didn't go moldy this year. Yay. Cutting down the trees. So yeah, what else do we read? I don't know. For that episode, I will look up my old syllabus for real. Can't remember. It's a really long time ago. You can talk about the way Star Trek tends to create terrifying alien races. And, oh, they're horrible. They're not people. They're awful. And then you meet one and you get used to them and you learn about them and you learn their culture. And now they're people to you. And I just read, somebody listed a whole bunch of those, and Robert Hewitt Wolfe wrote, A+, you got it, you're welcome. Like, it's just in the last few days. So like, that is a stated goal of Star Trek that the writers are doing on purpose, because that demonization, treating people as objects, they're not, they're people. Even when they're horrible, even when they're not like you, even when they've done bad things, they're still people. That's my rant of the day. But it all goes back to Kaylee in the engine room. It's not cool. It's not cool. And I think Sister Helen picked, well, I don't know. She participated in the writing of it, but I think that movie focused, if you watch the movie, I've read the book. She autographed it. She's awesome. I think for the movie, they picked a rapist on purpose because he's a person who turned people into things, treated people as things, deliberately removed agency from people and used that person. I know it was a collection of different people who she helped on death row, who they used to build that one character, the Sean Penn character. But the goal of it is person who treated people as objects. You still don't turn that person into an object. If treating people as objects is wrong, you don't treat people as objects. Isn't that pretty basic? I think that's pretty basic. Yeah, come on now. All right, so objects in space. Yeah, Firefly is really good times. It's the family of it. It's the found family. These disparate people who live together, work together, carry out these jobs together, and belong in this space where they fit together. It's just really, really nice. I don't know what other fans say about it. Oh, and I have this essay about it you can read. It's in a book called Serenity Found, More Essays, something, something, something. Anyway, if you look up Serenity Found, don't get the one about prayer, get this one. I have an essay in it. It's called Mars Needs Women. And from what I remember, and I still haven't looked it up, it is about how grounded the universe of Firefly is, and that's why it works. And it's about how a lot of sci-fi will sort of make everything this sterile environment where nobody has crocheting or knitting. You know what I mean? Like, nobody has anything messy. Nobody has to mend their shirt. Nobody has a tear in their... Yeah. And so there are grungy environments, yes, like Alien is a grungy environment, but it's devoid of all these traditionally feminine or traditionally down-to-earth elements, and I think that gives it a real poverty. And it comes from, you know, like the Heinlein kind of world, like where it's this masculine, military-based view of space, which there's no earthly reason space has to be military-based. No reason to imagine it that way. Absolutely none. I always thought it would be fun to imagine as a university. I don't know why. Maybe it's my background. But why not? Why isn't it a research institute? Why isn't it, think of anything. Why isn't it the Girl Scouts? Could be anything. I know there's Boy Scouts in some of these Heinlein books. Those universes are devoid of traditionally feminine things. They're often almost entirely devoid of women, but they're just really devoid of domesticity of any kind, children, families, those domestic touches that really make it real and universal, not just half of humanity stuff, all of humanity's stuff. And you could talk about the, you know, the artificial gender divide, etc. But it's how we read it when we see it. When we see somebody knitting, when we see Jane's hat, we read that as feminine and we read that as domestic and down home. And all of these different things are wrapped up in the hat. What did I write it about? It was about the hat, the cake. There's a cake that Kaylee makes for Simon. This chocolate cake, it's sort of awkward and has like taper candles, like candelabra kind of candles stuck in it. All random candles for his birthday. And there's a frilly dress that Kaylee really wants and gets in this wonderful episode, Shindig, that I love so much. She gets to wear this giant frilly like hoop skirt dress. It's a fancy frilly dress. This is a space universe with a fancy dress, a knitted hat, and a birthday cake with chocolate icing. Now, that is a real universe to me. And there are many things I can complain about with Firefly. I can go on about the weirdly old-timiness of it, which drives me crazy now. Like, why is it 1850 if it's the future? Why do they talk and act and have stuff from 1850 or 1875 or whatever? Why is it the past when it's the future? And I understand it's as a show, it's using the language of old Westerns, but that's like for us, that's like for TV. That's not how it would ever be. And that almost kicks me out of it now. I used to be okay with it, even though I always felt it was awkward, but now it really kicks me out. Like, stop talking like it's 1875. Even here and now, we don't talk like it's 1875. If you go to the West right now, people are not like that. They are not talking like that. They are not acting like that. That's not what they do. It's so weird. And I understand it again as an aesthetic choice, but it's just really alienating to me now. A flowered bonnet. What are we doing? Like, I don't know. Why are you wearing a calico dress? And then some people aren't, so it's really inconsistent. I don't know. So I have complaints, but it's also a really wonderful character-based found family show. So that's a bunch of stuff it does right. Does a lot of things right. Gives you these characters where I don't mean to put this way, but you don't really care what the stories are as much as you care about the characters and how they're doing and what they're doing and how they're coming through it. And their interactions with each other is a character-based show for people who love character-based shows. And that's a wonderful thing. So I think that's Objects in Space. There's an image of they're playing jacks and there's a ball and then the ball becomes a planet, which is just a beautiful little image. And there's this weird zoom through the floor and the inner workings of the ship, which we never really got to see before. It's like, you know how you can sometimes zoom through the floor of something and you see the pipes and the wires and things? It's like that. And that's very cool to me. That's like Serenity itself as this complex layered creature. It's just really, really, really good. It's an episode I could watch 7 times in a row, except I might want to skip the part where Jubal early threatens rape because it's really not cool. But then they kick him out and kill him. So that's great. Yay. Honestly, if that happens in true crime, you're psyched, right? If like the person who has been attacked and treated as an object and debased, etc., gets back and kills the attacker, it's the greatest thing. It's the greatest. Get your vengeance if someone's hurting you. Right on. Characters. And I know they're real people, not characters, but still. Like, you'd love to see that. In a dramatic sense, that's what you want. You want to see the bad guy get it back. You want it to be vengeance. You want it to be a satisfying ending where the bad guy, yeah, he gets thrown out into space to suffocate alone and die. Because he doesn't have a team. He doesn't have people at his back. He's just on his own being awful to people. So yeah, get rid of him. Kick them out. All right. So that's Objects in Space. Hopefully I get this up on Monday. I am going to try to post every Monday. And that's because my landlord keeps the Sabbath, which means there's no construction going on Sunday, which means Sunday is the day I need to record. Got it. Okay. So we're going to do that. That's my plan. And I have a whole plan for the next episode because a student just asked me how to approach the classics. How do you get into the classics, he said. I could talk for an hour on that without inhaling practically because it's hard. It's hard if you're not used to it. And I have strategies. So I'm gonna do that. And I would love to talk about like book 1 of the Iliad. whatever classics people bounce off of. My favorite literature is well, aside from Spaceships with Found Family, is like Bronze Age literature. It's my favorite. I might just dig into some of those because I really love them. So we'll look at those. Ancient Greek, you know, Gilgamesh. Yeah. Oh, that's my dog sighing. So, okay, that's what we're going to do. We're going to, next I'm going to do that one about how to dig into the classics. And then after that, possibly The Cyborg. But it's going to mean watching Battlestar Galactica and I'm going to have a whole emotional meltdown. So I'm not sure I want to do that. Avoid. Okay, fine, I'll do it. Though I also want to watch Poker Face, which I don't really know anything about, except Natasha Lyonne is in it. And apparently Chris Downey wrote it. Part of it was exec producer. So it's got to be good. So I'll watch that. I got as far as putting it up on the TV, and then I turned the TV off and read Agatha Christie because I needed to stop being conscious. I needed to stop trying. New TV is very hard for me, okay? I have face blindness. It's very confusing. I can tell Natasha Lyonne because she has that hair, but it's just really hard. It's like everyone else can be. I wish people on TV didn't all look the same. I mean, like, have different looks. I looked at the guest star list and it looks like a lot of really interesting and distinctive looking people, like Tim Blake Nelson, Ron Perlman, etc. What's the guy's name who was on Umbrella Academy? Anyway, so that should be good. So hopefully I can manage just really out of this world guest stars on that show. That's my plan. Watch that. Get over being scared of new shows. Here's what happens. I'll watch a new to me TV show. I will not sleep. I won't sleep that night. Does that sound fun? No, it's bad. This is why I need basically the Xanax of Agatha Christie. Otherwise my brain just, if I write a lot, I don't sleep. If I watch something new, I don't sleep. It's my brain gets overactive and then I'm in trouble. So anyway, I'm going to watch Poker Face. Look out, insomnia. Here I come. So we'll see how that goes. Okay. Hope you're all doing well. And, you know, send me an email at sacredcheesepodcast@gmail.com. The music is by Shaolin Dub. Thank you, Shaolin Dub. Okay. Thanks very much. Sacred Cheese of Life. Bye.